All right, so I figure this week we've had a couple of weeks to live with the iOS 14 and macOS Big Sur betas, and that's kind of where the most new stuff in Apple's new software is. So we'll get to that this week as one of the big things. And then also starting today, I think all these betas are in more places, so not just developers, but public beta versions. Before we get to that, Mayo, let's talk about kind of a release today. It's not officially out yet, but iOS 13.6. Was in the GM seed, and then they've changed it to beta 4, but it has release notes. There's no feedback gap, and so this is a really big clue that this will be the version that comes out to the public very soon. So let's talk about iOS 13.6 and what's new there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. It's relabeled GM beta 4, and so maybe they found a last minute bug that they're going to resolve. Although in the past they have done stuff like Goldmaster candidate too, so they've they always work around it. But what was interesting is that when the updates hit the feeds, they also come along with the release notes. So the release notes that you can see that customers see when they go into settings software update, we can see like ahead of time. And obviously this, as promised, 13.6 will include support for Car Key, which they announced at WWDC officially. It's where you can add your keys, an electronic key to your Apple Wallet app for supported cars. There's going to be a BMW model shipping sometime this month, they promised. And you can unlock your car with your phone or your watch, and you can share your key over iMessage with other people. And the shared keys can also have limited driving profiles, which is kind of clever. So if you just want to like let someone else drive your car quickly, but you don't want them to be able to free roam all over the place, then there'll be settings for that. I think the exact options for what filters and restrictions you can put on the keys depends on each car, because in the documentation it says refer to the car's manufacturer's information to know what to do there. So we'll obviously have to wait and see exactly what parameters are available. But I think Car Key is a nice feature, a nice little integration. It literally just appears as a pass in the wallet app in the top section. It doesn't look any different. It almost just looks like a credit card with the BMW logo written on it, right?
Yeah, I don't think I mentioned this show, but I think it's so funny that a literal car to start your car, unlock your car, drive your car came to the wallet app before in the US driver's licenses. There's not a standard digital driver's license yet, but you can have a car key in your wallet on your iPhone.
Well, you know what the big factor there is?
Government. Yeah.
Right, like there's just so much more admin work that has to go into getting government documentation available electronically, right? Like compared to, because even the rollout for the car key is going to be relatively small. Like it's going to be on this one car supported by BMW this month, and then supposedly some more by the end of the year. Like it's not a huge deployment. So even in the, even in the world of corporations, Apple's just about managed to wangle one through BMW, and that's only for the NFC, activation.
Yeah, they're doing their special sauce version, and then there's the kind of standard version that'll come later, right?
Yeah, and the standard version will eventually support like ultra wideband, which will take advantage of the U1 chip in the iPhone 11 series. And that's not, Apple said that they're not going to ship cars that support that until sometime next year, which could be, 15 months away potentially.
Right, yeah.
The timeline's still very extended, and so unfortunately, like a lot of modern iOS features that depend on accessories, it also requires accessory manufacturers to catch up. And so we just kind of stand around in limbo until it happens.
Yeah, it's definitely a cool feature, though. I mean, the idea that, so my kids are 3 and 7, so by the time that they're driving, maybe I'll be able to send them a virtual car key with restrictions on like...
By the time your kids are adults, do you think there'll be a gym kit device available on the market?
No, I think they'll be way past gym kit by then. But but the idea that I can say, here is access to the family car with this set of hours for using it and this speed limit, like you literally can't go faster than the speed limit in it. That's really cool. I mean, so by the, in 9 years or so, we'll see what this looks like.
Yeah. And there's convenience of being able to just like swap your phone or swap your watch or whatever to get into the car.
And then if your phone dies, you've got like 5 hours of reserve for the feature to work.
Right. Just like that's supported on like iPhone XS and later, because all of those phones have like this express reserve mode, power reserve mode, which just lets you access your Apple Pay card or your Express Transit card if you're, you know, traveling the underground or whatever. And that also applies to the car key. So you get your, you know, you get the life of the phone's battery, and then you get a few more hours after that if you, you know, really desperate. Yeah. I think it's a cool feature. Obviously, you know, people can't replace their wallet just with their phone today, because you still enter risks of it's not going to work everywhere if there's bugs, or if your phone, you know, does run out of power and you are left in the cold, you kind of still need to walk around with your wallet, and your wallet's going to have identity cards and stuff that your phone just can't represent, like your driving license, for instance. And so for the time being, you know, the human race as a whole is just going to carry on carrying their wallet around. But, you know, step by step, you take away those barriers, and we'll get there eventually. But I think it's a nice little feature, obviously, if you do have a car that works with it. The other interesting thing in the 13.6 release notes was that Apple actually talked about the Apple News Audio suite of features.
For the first time.
Interesting, because they didn't mention that at all on the WWC stage, where it had been a perfect venue for them to talk about, you know, a little new services initiative. And they spent time to talk about, you know, Apple Arcade and Apple Music stuff and the TV Plus trailer, but they didn't mention news at all. And so we obviously saw all these Apple News features in ahead of time when it was in just the betas but hidden behind a flag. And now it seems like it is actually going to ship in 13.6, or maybe that is why they've gone from GM to beta 4, because they're going to strip it out again, potentially.
Maybe. Because it's not like on Apple.com, and it's for the developer and public beta, I guess. But it's in the beta version. There's not like an official announcement about it or anything.
Yeah, and because it includes so many relationships with partners and, you know, famous actors and voice actors and stuff, you'd have thought they'd have done some sort of press about it. So it's a bit weird that... But this is official documentation that Apple's written, because, you know, there's like 8 bullet points about it. It's not just like a one-line error. They've like fully described it. And so I guess it's coming now, but we can't say that for 100%, but seems like it. And nicely, they kind of detail that, yeah, you're going to have audio recordings of some of the best stories in Apple News Plus, chosen by the Apple News Plus editorial team. That will require the subscription, right? But they're also going to do what they're calling Apple News Today, which is kind of a daily free audio briefing.
I love that.
So you can get a daily update of the top stories in Apple News, and presumably that includes some Apple News Plus content as well. But the actual feed will be free, and that will be available through the news app, and it will be available through Apple Podcasts. So if you just want to, you know, integrate into your daily podcast routine, then you can do that. And this will also be an option on Siri. So, you know, right now, if you ask Siri to read you the news, it gives you sources like, for me, it's like Sky or BBC. And I think in America, they have, you know, a few sources like Fox and stuff and CNBC and et cetera. And so Apple News Today briefing will also be an option there. And I think that's really nice, because one of the big cool features on like Amazon Echo is they can give you the daily update briefing, and it's like an algorithmic, the news headlines. But having it actually like spoken by a real human just gives it that extra like personal touch. And apparently that feed will be completely free. Like, they're not going to put that as a paywalled feature.
Yeah, and having done a daily Apple News podcast before, it's a lot of work. So
yeah, and you know Apple's going to do nice production values, and
right? And it's not just nice, I mean, it's Apple News, but it's not news about Apple. It's the news within Apple News.
There'll be CarPlay integration, so you can play it directly from your dashboard and stuff. And there's also some other minor improvements to the news app, including like local news for San Francisco and some certain cities and stuff. So. A pretty decent update to the news app that, you know,
hasn't been acknowledged yet.
As yet unannounced, apart from these release notes. So I guess we'll see if it comes in 13.6. It certainly seems like it's ready and done. And from what we've seen from, you know, being able to tweak and unlock it, seems like a pretty well implemented feature. You get like a now playing interface directly in the news app, and they are going
to
have,
which is unique to the news app, the way that it looks and is designed.
Correct. Yeah. And you can, you know, there's just a new tab audio that sits next to News Plus and the Today tab and the Spotlight tab. And the search tab, so you just go in there and you can listen to your stories instead of read them. And I think it'd be pretty compelling. And some people who have, you know, scorned News Plus for being pointless, including us, like maybe we'll reconsider now if you can listen to your news instead, because I think that's pretty valuable.
I'm glad there's a non-plus version of this product, because the News Plus stuff, I think it adds more value to the expensive $10 subscription. But what I'll use is the free version and podcast, and that's more what I want anyway, is here's a summary of the news, in Apple's podcast app from, you know, not just one news outlet, but from, you know, a group of editors who can look at all the different outlets and give you a good idea of what's going on in the podcast app with integration, you know, with the platform. The News Plus stuff I'll continue to not use, I think.
Yeah, maybe they bundle it or something later. But yeah, pretty cool update, 13.6, and we'll see if the new features actually ship.
Yeah, so it doesn't have a release date yet. You know, it was like the release candidate sort of, you know, now it's back and it's got a beta label to it, but it looks finished. It might just be a matter of timing when they're ready to do this. And you're probably right that News Plus Audio is kind of what's happening here with why there's it's kind of weird whether it's out or not yet, so... it's coming soon. What you can find for anybody is well, first for developers, there's beta 2 of iOS 14, macOS Big Sur, watchOS 7, tvOS 14, and then for public beta users, there's now iOS 14 and I think tvOS 14,
iPadOS 14.
That's the same thing.
I know, but you know what Apple's like. They like to be a stickler about it.
They changed it to iPadOS because there were actually going to be fewer features for iPad in future years, so that they had to distinguish the OS versions.
I mean, I don't want to say we called this, but we 100% called this. When they did the name change, like, everyone else in the community was like, this shows they're doubling down on their commitment. There's going to be major new features of the iPad every year. And we were like, well, it might just be a name change. And at least 2 years on, that's... seems to be what has happened.
I don't feel good about it, I'll say that. But
yeah, there are monumental iPad changes every single year. Like, yeah. The update this year is fine, but it still hasn't distanced itself from just being iOS.
Yeah. But as of today, the public beta versions of macOS Big Sur and the very first ever public beta for watchOS 7, for watchOS in general, isn't out yet, but coming soon. And those tend to be kind of well, watchOS is brand new, but we've seen macOS be a little bit behind the other beta versions before. So I guess it's a pretty big deal. So those should be available pretty soon. What's new in iOS 14 beta 2, which we presume is what the first public beta version of all these other updates are?
Correct, yeah. It was a relatively small beta 2, I'd say. Like other years, I think we've had bigger feature changes and enhancements. This year, we've seen in beta 2, they've tweaked the calendar icon. So now it's got like the name across the top is now like the abbreviation. So instead of saying Tuesday, it just says like TUE, and it's in like a bolder capitalized font, which looks quite nice and brings it more in line with what the Mac icon's like, because that always has the three-letter abbreviation. They've changed the clock icon, so now... The clock icon's always been dynamic since iOS 7, where it would actually show you, you know, the current time on the hands. Now what they've done is they've changed the style of the hands to actually make them look like the Apple Watch hands. So rather than just being like straight lines, they're more like the little like paddle shapes, right?
Yeah. As I think the widget for like it's funny, we still don't have the clock widget in beta 2, which is shown on Apple's website, you know, for the preview of iOS 14. But I think that's a similar way. It's more defined on the icon there than on the widget, to my eyes. And there still needs to be some more work to it. Like just changing out the hands isn't quite visually pleasing. The numbers need to be bolder or bigger, and maybe, you know, change the way the clock is designed around that. But it's a cool thing, and it continues to tie into the idea that widgets on iOS, you know. It's partly to market these as separate from Android widgets, but also they do have a connection to the watchOS app experiences and watch face experiences. And so like by literally putting like the Apple watch face on as a widget and as an app icon, like that, you know, it just all speaks together. So it's a good change.
Yeah, and why not? And like Apple is trying to make that kind of like paddle shape of the hands be, you know, iconic to it, right?
Because yeah, it's always been it's from the first generation of the watch software and
it doesn't
hardware.
Matter what watch face you use, if it's an analog face, it uses that style of hands,
unless it's Mickey. Yeah,
yeah. Unless it's Mickey.
Yeah.
We didn't see the clock widget in this beta. They did add a files widget. Mm-hmm. So now if you've got like recently accessed files or downloaded files, it can just show up on your home screen. It's pretty useful. Currently it's a bit buggy because it takes forever to update, but I think
all the widgets are that way for me.
I think, obviously, beta 2's only been out like a day or so, but yeah. I find the weather to be more up to date than it was in beta 1.
Yeah.
Your mileage may vary. At least for me, it does seem slightly better. So
I think I've still seen Cupertino both, but it's the same way on the Mac as well, which isn't as power constrained as iOS. So hopefully that improves. But I have seen a lot of what Cupertino's weather's been like before seeing what my local weather's been like. For maps, I think it's, so a couple of neat things found. The maps widget is dynamic. Both, in, I think we knew this much that, you know, it shows where you are on a map. It's like, that's your widget for the most part. It can be slow to update. And so that's too bad, but it can also change. Like if you're using the map for navigation and you've got an ETA to a location, that ETA becomes part of the maps widget. So on your home screen, there's data that's dynamic there. The only thing is, like, if you stop to get gas and now your ETA is 10 minutes later, like all the other widgets that are kind of slow to update, it may never update to your actual ETA. So that kind of loses out on the utility.
Yeah, I think you should expect that the frequency at which they update at least matches what the watch can do, right?
Sure, yeah, and a watch wouldn't be that behind.
Yeah, it wouldn't be that behind. So I still think there's like bugs at play here. Like the iPhone has a lot of battery capacity. They don't have to be super limited on, like, they basically said all these widgets are static, right? So they can't animate around, you know, they can't dance around apart from like the clock widget, which would be special, right?
Sure.
All the third-party widgets and all the system widgets are all just basically like static images that get updated on a timeline basis. But there should be no problem with like the weather always being up to date or the activity rings always being up to date, because the watch can do it perfectly fine. It never has a problem with battery life. So,
yeah,
you know, we're still only on beta 2. There's time for that. For
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other cool thing I saw in beta 2 was in the Apple Music app. Obviously, they've got all those other nice changes like the auto-playing playlist or the iPad redesign and Listen Now tab. Well, actually, in that Listen Now tab on beta 2, they've actually started animating some of the playlists, which is a nice little touch. So all the mixes, like the get up mix, the chill mix, the friends mix, the discovery mix, the new music mix, those stuff, they've got little like animated tiles now instead of just the static images. And it also seems like they're expanding some of their playlists, just, you know, the vast array of Apple Music players for every genre. And they've always had cool little art. And, you know, there was a story, a year ago that they were commissioning people that made, like, proper album, like, music album covers to make playlist covers as well. And now I saw on the Party Starters album, that's also animated now. So rather than just being, like, a shoe, it's got, like, a disco ball and there's little, like, confetti that flies past. So, you know, just nice little tweaks to make the experience just a bit cooler.
I love the changes to Apple Music on iOS 14 and macOS Big Sur in that, you know, functionally, I guess the only thing that's really different is the like infinite playback stuff where it'll pull in similar songs, like a station basically after a playlist ends or an album ends. That's like a functional difference, but the rest of it is kind of just visual. It's like things are rearranged and restyled. But it's enough that it's not just really gradual. It's very noticeable and I like it. I mean, it's good stuff. I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I can't complain. Really nice updates
too. Yeah. And the artwork for the like friends mix, favorites mix, get up mix and chill mix, new music mix, those changed right before WWDC to this new style, which was like the first
change. Wavy gradients, right?
Right. They could be like live wallpapers, for example. But then it wasn't until the last few days when they started to animate if you're on iOS 14 or macOS.
Yeah, and right now they only animate on that like first screen. So when they're in the kind of poster sized carousels on the Listen Now tab, they animate. If you actually click through, they're still the static pictures. So it'd be nice if they can, you know, do a through line for the entire everywhere that they're shown. But it's a nice start.
Yeah, yeah. It's really, there's so much cool. So the search screen with the browse categories, there's so much like visually good stuff there. So if you like gradients and there's a style, then you'll like what you see there.
All right, let's take a break and we'll be back with some more iOS 14 discussion.
Cool.
This week's episode of Happy Hour is sponsored by Griffin. Griffin's trusted accessories maximize and protect your tech devices, and they're definitely made to last. When Apple brought back the iPhone SE early this year, Griffin launched an updated collection of their classic iPhone SE cases. The new lineup features Griffin's proven designs while integrating new technology. Happy Hour listeners can protect their iPhone SE with two durable and lightweight options. There's the Survivor Strong and the Survivor Clear case styles. Both models were carefully engineered to protect against drops and prevent scratches on your phone. The sleek, lightweight protective cases can withstand up to 7 feet drops on concrete. The cases follow the contours and natural shape of the phone, so they don't add unnecessary bulk. Great design has always been at the core of Griffin Survivor products. They know that phone protection and an aesthetically pleasing look are not mutually exclusive things. The cases are engineered and tested to pass military standards of protection, and they've got you covered from the usual bumps, scrapes, and scratches of everyday life. The Survivor Strong case features a slim, tapered design, including a UV coating for additional defense against scratches. The Griffin Survivor cases for iPhone SE are available now with prices starting at $19.99. And listeners to this show can use promo code 9to5survivor, that's number 9, T-O, number 5, Survivor, all caps, and check out to get 15% off. Thanks to Griffin for sponsoring the show.
That's a cool sponsor, Griffin, and the Survivor stuff is awesome. As a dad, you want military-grade protection for your kid's stuff, so, you know, totally. All right, let's talk about our two-week impressions with iOS 14 and macOS Big Sur. Let's start off with macOS Big Sur. So, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you're running the beta, although, yeah.
I may have had experience with macOS Big Sur.
Yeah, that's...
Contractually, that is what I can say.
Sure, okay, cool. yeah, I'm running it on my only Mac, and, you know, we always get the question of, like, is it safe to run this on your daily driver, whether it's your phone or your iPad, your watch, or your Mac? My response is kind of always the same, regardless of, like, how good or bad the OSs are, which is that, you know, the first beta can be excellent, and the second beta or third beta can just introduce new bugs that you don't expect, and they aren't resolved until the fall. And I've certainly experienced that where, like, you know, the first beta I was really good on my Mac, and then now I'm seeing a lot of kernel panic. So you just kind of...
Yeah, I've seen bugginess with the phone on beta 2 that wasn't there on beta 1.
Yeah.
And some people are like, well, Apple's doing the public beta now with beta 2. That must be a sign of stability. I don't think that really holds up. Like,
it never has.
They just start the public betas about mid-July, like every single year.
That's
regardless of what the state of the system is. They did it last year with iOS 13, which was, you know, worse than what iOS 14 was. They did it with iOS 12. Like, they just do it on a time schedule. It doesn't say anything about the quality of the software. And you're completely right. It can be fine in beta 1, get buggy in beta 2 as they, like, flesh out all the features. And then it will, you know, gradually get good again by the time the thing ships.
Yeah. So to answer the question, it's not how is the software, but it's more like what is your tolerance for unreliable software that could get better or worse before it's finalized?
Yeah, I'd say anecdotally, it's fine for me. Like, my banking app doesn't work, so I'd have to use the website, right? But in general, most stuff's fine. If there's occasional glitches and bugs, you just have to, like, restart or quit the thing. So, but that's what the beta's about, right? So
yeah.
I think they're on a fine track. It seems okay. Like, if you're interested in the features, go for it.
Sure. Yeah. And I would encourage anyone, like, I've ran beta since I was 5, you know, and it was before I was doing any of this professionally. I was just excited about it. And I've always had that kind of high threshold for, you know, just based on life circumstances that if this thing crashes, like, it's not the end of the world for me. You know, versus other experiences can be, you know, when the actual software is out, even that is too buggy for some people, you know, based on what their reliance is on the devices. So a fun macOS Big Sur bug I've had with messages is I'm using it with two displays, and I think that might be part of the bug. But if I have messages on one display, it'll also be in the other display, and I'll have like two different chat threads, and then it's reoccurring enough that I'm getting used to it. But I'll have like one conversation over here and one over here, but not as like a multi-window. It's like the windows with the whole list of chats too, you know what I mean?
It's just super wide.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. So that works. So macOS Big Sur, the design, like, you know, you're a fan of it, you're not a fan of it. It just depends on your taste. In using it, the longer I use it, I was a fan of it from the start because it was just such a different, it wasn't dramatically,
fresh.
Yeah, it wasn't like dramatically different of like a theme, but it was enough like small changes throughout the OS that it's like, this is a different OS. The way I kind of think of it is like, if you ever see in a movie or, you know, something where there's like a sci-fi OS that they're having to use to show that it's not like Windows or Mac OS, it reminds me of that, of like, it's designed to look cool and be neat, and to show that it's like futuristic. And that's kind of what I get from Big Sur. Is that it just feels like modern and futuristic and kind of like they're achieving something visually that they didn't do before, but they tried to. So I'm liking that about it.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy. Like,
sure.
it does look kind of like an operating system that someone would mock up as, this is what a computer might look like. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's kind of stripped down to bare essentials. And there are critics who would say, like, they've designed it to look good, not to work good, if you know what I mean. And I think there are areas where contrast is a difficulty, or like they've simplified it so much it's, you know, hard to work out that this button runs into this button and stuff. But I don't think it's I don't think it's offensive to the point of me like getting annoyed about it, right? Like, I think it's fine, right? The some of the icons obviously need some love, but it's not terrible. It's way better than the iOS 7 situation.
Yes.
And so there'll be some tweaks and ebb and flow and stuff, but I think they're on a perfectly fine track. It's a modernization. I don't think you should get too annoyed about it. Like, there are definitely some areas where it's worse and some areas where it's better, and it kind of like evens itself out.
Yeah. Functionally, so that's visually kind of what I'm thinking. Functionally, I always put Notification Center, and I use it heavily on the Mac, as a hot corner in the top right corner. So my mouse cursor goes up there, and you do this in the settings or system preferences in the like screensaver settings is one way to do it. But if I put my cursor in the top right corner of a Mac display, it opens up the Notification Center. And I never used widgets before as part of like the today view, because they were a separate click. And I made it where, you know, notifications, I got to see like the whole list of those things, which is kind of like a pretty major app launcher for me. Like I'll go to the alert, I'll see the alert, and then I'll launch the app from that way. Having that be like about half of the height, or maybe like 2/5 of the height of that, the whole side of the screen, being for alerts, and then the rest being for widgets. I'm now doing, like, I'm actually using the widgets for the first time and like getting utility out of them. They're not just something that you could use, but I'm actually like using them now.
They're not just the tab that you click past to get to the tab you actually want to use.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, and it was just, it just never worked for me that I could, with a gesture, open Notification Center, but then have to click a very specific part of the screen to get to widgets. So I just never use the widgets.
Yeah, right. Like, widgets are meant for convenience. So anything that gets in the way of that basically affects the utility.
Yeah. So that alone is like a big part of what Big Sur is for me, you know, once you get past the design of it. Next thing is Control Center. And, you know, one of the things I like is whenever the OS can do things that make apps, like specific utilities, not as necessary. So like, for example, one thing with the way that the widgets work now is that, you know, you can have multiple calendar widgets. And so I've got one that's like wide, but not large. And it shows me events today, the month view. And then below that, I've got the large one that is like a list view of your upcoming appointments. And with those two widgets, I've kind of recreated what I use the Fantastical menu bar for. And so it's like, there's like with a swipe, there's that with all the other widgets. And so I'm relying on that right now. And I really like it. The same thing with Control Center being on Big Sur. You can easily change to dark mode now without having to dig into the system preferences. And so I was using the Night Owl app to do that before. Mm-hmm. Night Owl is still like more specialized in that you can customize like how apps behave and make it just like a right click from the menu bar, so it's instant. But you couldn't do that before from the menu bar before Big Sur without an app, and now you can get there easily. And so I've got dark mode to come on automatically after sunset. But it's really, I love being able to just say, I don't want to use Night Owl anymore as an app in my menu bar or on my Mac at all. And now it's a part of the system. So that's really cool. I'm not
like,
sure.
There's loads of just random like Mac utilities that just basically just exist to patch stuff in that Apple should offer. Right.
Yeah.
And so every year they do some of those things. And, you know, some people complain about Sherlocking, but whatever, but it's just kind of logical things that the OS should do that other developers, you know, capitalize on until Apple does it. And that's a perfect example.
Yeah. I'm not sure if this is like functionally different or not. I think they might just be kind of like visually faking it. But in my experience, now, you know, it's funny because it looks different. So just so much about it feels different. But when you change from a Wi-Fi network to a hotspot, they've called it instant hotspot before when it's like part from your phone, your iPhone. I've always seen it load and have like a time that it could fail, and maybe it would fail. Now it's like it literally is instant. It's like changing, you know, selecting something in a menu and then it's done. And I'm not sure if they're just like faking the change visually. Like they say that you change from your Wi-Fi to your hotspot. But there's no waiting at all. It shows you that it's done. And then in my experience, it works. So maybe functionally behind the scenes is different, but even just like visually the way that they're presenting it to you, it feels like, oh, this works now versus, oh, maybe this will work. So I mean, I'd be curious.
Either way, if they're faking it or doing it for real, it makes the experience feel better.
Right, right. It's like fixing the animation.
Classic example is like Safari. In the olden days, like, you know, 6 years ago, the Safari loading bar would literally tell the truth. It would literally be the percentage across the URL field is the amount of the page that's loaded. And then in, I think it was Yosemite, around that time, they changed it to basically just fake the loading bar. So it approximates roughly how the page is loading, but it will like, you know, immediately go to 25% and then zoom off to the right to make it feel faster, even if the page is still loading. And then if the page is actually stalled, they just increment the progress bar very slightly for like a minute, and then they'll tell you that the page isn't loaded. And it, those tiny changes actually make you feel like the whole OS is moving faster and just responding more quickly to you, even when they're not. And like, people can be like, oh, they're not doing it for real. But the point is they're doing both, right? They're increasing the speed of the system, and then they do the animations and the effects that, you know, do it even more so. And we talked a bit last week about the Apple Watch button cancellation with, you know, double tap for the home, for the side button and the crown, and they've, you know, ramped that up. And all these little like things just make the experience just so much nicer across the board. It's like, you know, 10 niceties add up.
Do we talk about how the Big Sur shows you how long until your battery's charged when you're charging?
No, that's a retracing of their steps, right? Because they used to.
It was a big deal to remove that, and they said that they removed it because it wasn't accurate, that they couldn't kind of gauge realistically how long is left on a battery, how long until it's charged, because it varies on what your system is doing, whether it's indexing or using, you know, energy heavy apps. Now it's back.
And this was around the time when the battery life of the MacBook Pro had also gotten slightly worse.
Right. So and then
there's a conspiracy theory that, and, you know, probably partially validated, that they just got rid of it because it was embarrassing that the estimated times had gone down.
Right.
And now we're in the world of the 16 MacBook Pro, and they've suddenly put them back again.
This is around 2 or 3 years ago, whenever people were putting MacBooks in their fridges, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
yeah,
that was a real thing. Look it up.
They've still a lot of that stuff, right, when this release. They got the battery percentage back. They've got the chime, the startup chimes now on again.
It's if your Mac lost it because it was too new a machine, it's now back. And if you have had it the whole time, you can now turn it off with a preference. Having kernel panics regularly, I am hearing the chime a lot. It was cool at first when I was doing the update, because I was like, oh, wow, the chime's back. That's a good feeling, like the old days. And now I'm hearing it a lot. And if I turn it off, it would be because it's just the number of kernel panics, because it's only cool if it's rare. But then even so, like, I think it used to be tied to your system volume. So if your Mac was muted and you rebooted, it wouldn't chime, I think, if you're in like a noisy class, if you're in a quiet classroom. And so that was a thing. Now they're just having the option to turn it off if you're, you know, don't want your Mac to chime in a silent classroom, and, you know, it's cool. But I wonder if the battery thing is because they're about to have really good battery life and predictable battery life, you know, with the Apple Silicon.
Yeah, they want to show off now, so they brought it back.
And they want to show off how bad Intel chips are in comparison. So and then last thing. I'm not sure if we've gotten into it yet before in the podcast, but having Apple file system support for Time Machine as a drive, you can have it be in Apple file system format, use that as a Time Machine backup. Functionally, so I've got OneDrive that is not APFS and one that is, and they're both 2 terabytes. I'm using them both to back up the Time Machine and kind of compare the experience. I've not done anything with like a restore yet, but if you just open Finder and look at them, they look different. Like, one is like a folder of sparse bundles, and then one is like, looks like a bunch of different drives.
Okay.
That are dated. And I think you just like pick the, I think from that you could pick the one that you want to restore to, versus going
in. Obviously, you're meant to use the UI, right?
But, right. Yeah. And I've not compared what the UI is like, if it's any different in performance, but it seems like you could just look at the Finder, open up the timestamp drive, and like that would be your target. So there is certainly a difference there.
We have been waiting for them to adopt like the APFS features, which is kind of like instant snapshotting, fast delta changes and stuff. And they introduced APFS, but Time Machine didn't change. And so at least, and then that happened again for another year. And now this time around, they've definitely done something because now they're supporting APFS drives. And it'd be logical that they also took that time to, you know, redo it to actually take advantage of the performance features of the file system that they invented.
About time,
I think they've done it, so that's cool.
Yeah, so I'm still kind of studying what's going, you know, what are the differences here. Right now I've got, let's see, the last backup. Well, yeah, I'll report back if I notice anything else different. But at least when you open Finder, it's totally different the way it looks. So that's cool. And then for the iOS stuff, I mean, this week especially, I want to get into some features in a moment that we didn't really, that I didn't know about, and then ask if you knew about them, and then see if other people knew about them. But they're all like out there, but just new to me. But just in terms of iOS, changes from maybe the first episode that we discussed iOS 14. I mentioned before, I always had this system where like my home screen one was kind of organized. The second home screen was folders by category and then alphabetically. I've totally turned off that second home screen, and I'm just relying on what the app library of folders do for me.
So you're just on a one home screen, Dan.
It's one home screen. Home screen zero, like to the left of your home screen, is for old fashioned widgets because that's the only place they can go. And I've got one that I'm still using. I would get rid of it, but it would just be an empty home screen there. So it's kind of gives it utility. I've got two widgets on my actual home screen, and I'll put a picture in the show notes so people can see it. But I'm doing in the top left corner the 4x4 size with calendar, stocks, and reminders now. And then I've got four icons that are all kind of like camera and photo related. And then I'm doing the 4x2 for the next one for battery, maps, and weather. And then I've got four icons on the bottom, a blank space, and then my dock. And that's the home screen. And it feels like by having it in this layout, especially, it's like that's what Android's been. It's like you can have like the space taking up widgets and then have like four icons or have eight icons on your home screen without it being just four at the top and then a bunch of empty space. So I'm really happy with that. And then I'm getting used to like the only thing that I have as a complaint is, you know, that my dog tracker is in the health and fitness app. But I think that's probably could be resolved by the app changing its category in the app store.
Right. Because right now the app library stuff's all just done by the category of the app in the store.
Yeah. So I'll leave that as like just an edge case. When you have recently added, it's four columns of your alphabetical or organized apps. I think that should be the list view as an option. I am using the list view sometimes, and because it's alphabetical, but it's one column, the app icon and the name, and then a bunch of blank space. It can be a very slow way to get to something unless you're like, you know, I don't know, just browsing, I guess. But I have found that using the scroller on the side where you tap about what the letter is, that I've gotten to some apps quickly that way too.
Yeah, they could probably just make it like two apps per row instead of one app per row just to use the space a bit better.
Probably so. Recently added can fit a whole lot of stuff, and I guess I've recently added a whole lot of stuff using this new model. So that's like my alphabetical list, but four columns, and I really like the way that works. But yeah, I'm happy with this. It's close enough to what I was doing before that I like it.
I am really interested in what the like wider reaction to the app library will be. Like, I think widgets can be popular, and you know, people will pick their 2, 3, 4, 5 widgets that they really like, and they'll, you know, use them on either on their main home screen or the second home screen.
Yeah, I don't think it's intuitive. I think that it's still like you've got to know what you're doing to get around these things.
Sure. But widgets are so, widgets like fashion, right? Like that will spread around. People will just know, like, even it could be a really unintuitive method, but people will just, it will just become like known how to do it. Like people be like, I want that widget on my home screen. How do I do it? And then someone will show them once and they'll just remember. Like,
sure. Yeah.
It's kind of like Control Center, how you have to like turn on screen recording, but loads of people just know that that's what you have to do. And then they go and do it. So
yeah.
Like that, so I agree that some of the widget stuff could be slightly more intuitive, especially like switching sizes. Like I think if you long press on the weather icon, like the weather app, there should be like an option to just convert to the 2x2 widget immediately. Do you know what I mean? Like
yeah,
quicker ways to switch from the icon to the widget. And then if you choose the 2x2 widget, but you actually want the 4x2 widget, you shouldn't have to like start from zero and go back to add menu and change the widget size. You should just be able to change the size by like pressing on it. Or, you know, like if there's a bit of disjointedness there, but I think it's, for the most part, it's fine. The app library is more like, I've seen a lot of people complain that they can't like manually organize the stuff in the app library.
I get the restraint, and like, I've got star tracking apps, Night Sky and Sky Guide are in reference and reading, which still truncates on the iPhone 11 Pro. But then another app that, let's see what the name of this is, Starwalk. It's the same category of app, but because it's different in the App Store, it's different in the folders. So it's in its own education category folder. So,
and like, Apple's obviously going for the fact that the app library is like the junk drawer, so you shouldn't have to worry about organizing it. We'll organize it for you.
Mm-hmm.
But the limitations of just, you know, naively categorizing by the App Store category does show in some places where this app, you should really think it should be in a different place. Like my, like one of the apps that I develop is Bingo Machine, and I have that under the primary category of casino games, because, you know, Bingo's like casino-ish, right? But it's not a game, but that means now on the app library, it's listed under all the games that I've got on there. But really, it should be in like utilities and something, and there's no way to tell the system, like, you know, maybe there shouldn't be a way to just manually rearrange the folders how you want, but maybe you could just tell it, like, treat this as a utility rather than a game, so you could at least have some organization or control over how it's laid out.
Yeah. So that's been my experience so far. One last thing on widgets and the way that iOS 14 works so far. The photos widget, well, two things. One is the Siri suggestions widget is really interesting in that it's like the Siri suggestions from Spotlight, where it's, you know, 4 to 8 apps that it recommends that you use based on habits and time and everything. But it just puts them on the home screen as if they were on your home screen without the widget background. And then that is dynamic, and they can have badges and that kind of thing too. So that's kind of neat. The photos widget I like a lot, because you can have your background can be something, you know, like the default background or something that's like a blur, so it's really, everything else is really legible. You know, just black, like whatever you want. But then you still want some personalization to your home screen. And so by having the photos widget there as an option, I found that it's really cool to see, oh, that's a really cool memory right in the photos widget without me opening the photos app. But so far, I think the widget is just featured images and so featured photos. And so it picks intelligently based on, you know, whatever the algorithm is doing. I wish you could make an album that, or like just your favorites that. And I think that's an obvious place to go with this in a future beta or a future update, is make this my favorites album as the widget and scroll through those, because I've got a lot of pictures, and I've got pictures from college and high school and, like, you know, probably 15 years of like pictures without gaps. And so the photos widget has shown like ex-girlfriends and like stuff that I don't really want to be on the home screen right there. Like, you know,
yeah, that's the thing with the algorithm that you feature photos is that it's really cute and nice until it features something that you don't want to see. And
right.
Annoying.
Yeah. So that's been a thing. So I don't have the photos widget on anymore for that reason, because I don't want to get in trouble. But I will use it again if it becomes an option to use like your favorites album as what it carousels through.
And other of Apple's widgets have that flexibility. Like the notes widget can just show you your notes, or you can say specifically this note or specifically this folder of notes, only show me the notes from in there.
Yeah. So with news, you pick the category, for example.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Like you can have just algorithmic top stories. You can say just this category, and same with a lot of the others as well. So it wouldn't be out of place for photos to do the same thing. And I agree. Like, I would love to have photos favorites, all the pictures I star, just, you know, rotate around. And we talked about like a year ago how it would be nice if the backgrounds of the phone could be like a dynamic photo album, just cycle through your pictures, right? And they didn't do that, but the widgets kind of, you know, are a proxy to that, because I guarantee you there'll be people who just make the 4x4 widget and just make it photos, and they can just see, you know, nice pictures of their family, nice pictures of their kids, and there's nothing wrong with that. But like, a lot of people don't want to be immediately blasted with some random picture from uni that is considered a memory, right?
I might put it on home screen zero, because I have found that like the features that it's surfacing, a lot of them are really relevant. Like this, you know, on this year, this day a year ago or 2 years ago. And so it's like pictures of my kids when they were, you know, much younger. And so like, and they're good pictures. So I'll share them with my wife or something. And it's like, you know, I wouldn't have resurfaced them otherwise. But yeah, like one was a colleague, at CES several years ago. It's like, I don't really want his face on my background on my home screen right now. Like, that's kind of weird. And you can't change it in the moment either. So it's like, just wait until it cycles through later in the day. So yeah, I've removed that from the home screen for now. You want to take a break and do one more ad, and then we'll get into some did you knows?
Go for it. So our second ad this week, thanks to our friends at Smile Software for sponsoring Happy Hour. Save time typing and boost your productivity with Text Expander. Text Expander helps you manage everything that you type repetitively. Email addresses, phone numbers, common message replies. Turn the things you type into reusable snippets to access them time and time again. Your snippets can be simple, like a phone number, or something more complicated, like a long form with fill-in fields and automatically calculated dates. Text Expander works everywhere that you can type. Slack, Google Docs, Trello, email, web browsers, the lot. And it just goes beyond simple find and replace. You can customize your reusable snippets with fill-in fields and pop-up lists. So you could like quickly stamp out an invoice with easily editable fields and then change only the bits that need to be customized for each individual. And if you've ever written something twice, there's a good chance that you could work smarter and use a Text Expander snippet instead. It's not just about automating repeat work. Reusing snippets ensures consistency in your messaging. Text Expander is available for macOS, iPhone, iPad, Windows, Chrome. You know, if you can type, you can probably find Text Expander for that platform. And Text Expander for Teams makes it easy to manage and share snippets across your company. Unlock your productivity with Text Expander. Listeners to this show can get 20% off their first year subscription. Visit textexpander.com/podcast to learn more and sign up. That's textexpander.com/podcast.
Yeah, a Text Expander I love so much. If there was one app I had to have tattooed to my body, it would be Text Expander because I just rely on it that much. Thanks, Text Expander. All right, let's talk about some new stuff that that maybe everyone knew about, maybe no one knew about, but it's all out there on Apple.com. These are things that in using the betas for 2 weeks, it took me to like go and find the features listed to know that they were there because I just hadn't like ran into them or tried them. The first thing is for macOS Big Sur, and it's really like this is what the is new in the Photos app. Some small things like you can now rotate your videos on Photos from Mac, which I guess was iOS before.
Yeah, that was iOS last year,
and not on the Mac. So this year it's on the Mac. Cool. It's actually a very useful thing. You don't have to have iMovie for it, or you know, I guess QuickTime or however. The retouch tool, which is like, if there's like a speck of dust on a picture or an object that you want to try and remove, a scratch, you know, any of those things on an image, you use the retouch tool to try and remove it, and it'll make that spot blend in with the rest of the image. That's been changed in a way that you wouldn't know unless you read about it, but they say it now uses advanced machine learning. So if you're a big user of the retouch tool like I am, you know, if I take a picture of like a product on my desk and it turns out, oh, there's like a crumb from some food over there, and some dust and like smudges, I want to perfect it. Oh, you know, because Lord knows people are going to like analyze this picture and comment on it. Then I'll you know, fix it with that. And so it's neat that that's changed.
You don't know how many times I've just been, you know, airbrushing dust off with the automatic repairing tools in either like Photos or Pixelmator. It's just, you've just had this beautiful like white box and there's just some like dust on the side, like click, click, click.
You don't see with the eye, but the camera is unforgiving. Yeah. When you blow it up.
One other cool thing about Photos, actually, I know it was on iOS, but I'm sure they did it on the Mac as well, is that when you like edit a photo now, so say you do rotate the video, when you go back out, it can do the like rendering of the changes in the background. So you don't have to wait. You can just like go onto your next photo and it will just carry on doing it. Whereas on like iOS 13 and earlier, if you rotate the video and then press done, you'd then just be sitting at like a loading spinner waiting for it to actually finish before you could do anything else. Whereas now they just like offload that task into the background and you can carry on doing other things like in the Photos app or with a different app on the phone, and it will just finish it on its own. So like, it's just, again, one of those things that makes it feel faster, even though the actual operation is taking the same amount of time.
Yep. Photos have had descriptions in the past where you can describe what's in the image, I guess they're searchable. Those are now called captions. You can view and edit those. They work with photos and videos. And if you use iCloud Photos, it syncs with your devices. This is one of those, like, that's how it should work. But
yeah, because captions are available on iOS now.
Right. Like, yeah.
When they weren't before.
That's it.
They'd always store it in your Mac photo library, but they weren't accessible from the phone, and now mm-hmm. they are.
Yep. On the Mac, you can now use the vibrance effect on photos, and you can change intensity of filters as well. You can change portrait lighting effects there. So that's a change there. And then memory enhancements enjoy a more relevant selection of photos and videos and memories. There's a larger selection of music tracks, which is good because there was only a few before. So that's a good change. And then they say enhanced video stabilization when playing memory movies. So memories are things that my kid uses a ton because they're so easy to make. And then I've just found that, like, the memories that it creates, like, making the memory movie is like the final product of that and sharing those. On Father's Day, there was one presented to me of, like, my daughter and, you know, over 7 years, pictures of us just together on different, you know, occasions. And I made one of those and I shared it with her. And it was like, you know, it was like an Apple ad. Like, that'll make you cry. So any enhancement to those is really welcome. So that's cool. That's photos on the Mac. Reminders. I think Reminders gets changes on both the Mac and iOS in a way that, like, last year was like the big Reminders change, right? Where it was a whole new app.
Correct.
This year there's assigning reminders to people and shared lists and they get notified about it. So if you have a shared project, or, like, you know, I guess even a simple example is if me and my spouse share a grocery list, I can assign or she can assign milk to me so that it's not just added, but I also know that she added it there. It's on there, you know, it's assigned. So that's a neat thing.
Yeah, that's neat.
And it's just more, you know, with reminders evolving. There's a big number of changes with reminders. One thing on macOS Big Sur is better keyboard support, which I'm sure extends to iPadOS as well, for reminders. So
I hope they let you, like, tab to indent the reminders, because on Catalina you have to, like, right click and say reminder, whereas it was just so natural to just press enter and then press tab to, like, indent it.
I don't see that as a change, but maybe I'll have to try it out.
That should be under the better keyboard support.
That's right. Right, yeah. There's integration with Mail now, where if what they say is when you're corresponding with someone in Mail, Siri recognizes possible reminders and makes suggestions for you to create them. So I never used reminders in the iOS 13 period. I used to use it heavily, like, from iOS 5 until I moved to Things heavily. I'm now using reminders in a way that's more than just a shopping list or, like, you know, home improvements list. So I'm looking forward to I guess my big point there is I'm glad that there's, like, a year two changes and not just we shipped it, now we're done. On Apple TV, you might have even mentioned this in the updates on TVS 14, but audio sharing for Apple TV with AirPods. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's really nice.
You can do two AirPods at the same time.
Yep. That's a cool.
And they've actually separated out. Like, AirPods now sit at the top of the audio sources list. So whereas before, it would just be a big jumble of, like, you know, your HomePods in the other room, or your TV over here, or this. Now they've actually, like, split it out. So AirPods and headphones are directly at the top, which makes sense because that's 99% of the time what you want to actually click on.
Yeah. There's a few things here on camera, and this is for iOS 14. The example I've got in front of me is, I'll find the more specific example in a moment, but taking photos is even quicker with faster time to shoot first shot and faster shot to shot performance. So there's some changes that just make it faster to take pictures, which is interesting. You know,
I think what they do in there is, like, if they notice that you're taking five photos in quick succession, the first two photos be full quality, and then the remaining three, they start turning off some of the algorithms that slow the sensor down. Deep Fusion, right? That has some time delay to it. And so what they're doing is, like, the first picture will be, like, full resolution, which is most of the time what people are going to do, right? Because they snap a picture and they wait. But if you are taking, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, which isn't a burst but is individual pictures,
sure,
they're basically, like, turning off some of the extra processing on, you know, pictures 3, 4, and 5 to make sure you can keep taking pictures. Whereas before, you'd be like hit with delays and you'd be waiting.
Yeah, I'm really happy to see this because I've been torn lately. Like I know that the iPhone 11 Pro camera, it's a totally different app than what we've seen from like the iPhone XS, for example. And so it's felt like it's both buggy and just heavy, and night mode is great. I wish you could turn it off entirely. You can't. You know, you can turn it off as a mode once it's activated for that shot, but you can't say never use night mode or only turn it on manually, which I think is a mistake. But even like one thing I've done, you know, to try and improve that is just turn off live photos. And I'm kind of torn on that because I've got a really big appreciation for live photos since the iPhone 6S. But also just like taking pictures with a camera that isn't the iPhone can just feel so much faster than like the iPhone 11 Pro camera.
Yeah, like the iPhone 11 camera is fast, mm-hmm. but 99% of the world will be perfectly content with it. Mm-hmm. But if you use like a DSLR type camera, it just feels so much more instant. Like it's
or an iPhone 10, because of the lack of features.
Yeah, I guess. Like I can't say my 11 Pro feels noticeably slower than the. And the 10 to me. Yeah. I don't know if I could reciprocate that one.
Yeah, okay. I can. And then things like the way that the camera just makes every other app quit, like fall out of memory. And
yeah, that happens for sure.
Like that just makes me feel like, oh, this is buggy. This isn't optimized. Yeah, this isn't great.
Yeah, like they're doing so much processing on the 11 Pro camera system that mm-hmm. You're lucky to get any multitasking at all if you're using the camera.
Sure, exactly. You're right. Multitasking like with audio playing and you're a passenger with CarPlay on and you open the camera like to take a picture in the car, it's just game over. Like too much.
That's one place that is without question. We spoke about this when the iPhone 11 Pro was new.
Yeah,
that is one place where if they added additional RAM, mm-hmm. you would notice the difference.
Absolutely. Right?
Most of the time when you're using an iPhone, the lack of additional RAM doesn't really come up, but for the iPhone 11 Pro camera is pushing the memory limits to the max.
And yeah,
when the IE14 chip comes out this fall in the iPhone 12, fingers crossed they've doubled the RAM or something, because then that won't happen anymore.
There was that rumor for a little bit that ended up not turning out to be the case, but that there was dedicated RAM just for the camera app.
Yeah.
That might have been a good idea.
It was a good rumor in theory.
Yeah. This is more specific on the camera performance. You can now shoot photos up to 90% faster. That sounds like a big change. At up to 4 frames per second. Okay. Time to first shot is now up to 25% faster. Portrait shot to shot is up to 15% faster. There's a new setting to prioritize faster shooting. I haven't found that yet, but I will go and search for that. The camera can intelligently modify how photos are processed, so you can shoot even faster and never miss a shot. So that's kind of describing what you were saying in more detail. So
yeah, you can turn it off if you just want the old behavior.
Yeah, so I need to go in and do the toggle because I didn't know about that. Night mode, they say updated night mode capture experience. When taking photos in night mode on 11 and 11 Pro, the camera uses the gyroscope to provide a guidance indicator to help you stay steady throughout the capture. So I've seen that, and I've seen people share that. It says, and you have an option to cancel in mid-capture rather than waiting for the capture to finish. So that's good. Like, I'm not 100% satisfied with night mode. You know, I wish I could say never use it if I don't want to use it, because it can ruin good shots. It can make.
I wish you could turn off it automatically, mm-hmm. enabling itself.
Yeah. Yes.
Because it's fine for static images, mm-hmm. but if you just want to take pictures in the dark, it's better to have it turned off.
Yeah. And then capture burst photos in QuickTake video with volume buttons. So before I describe that, we did see that the at least XS and XR, those can do QuickTake capture now, right? Where you hold down the shutter button and instead of burst mode, it turns the photo into a video.
Right. Yeah. That was marketed as iPhone 11 exclusive, and now when iOS 14 they've back deployed it.
Yeah, which it's a good feature, so I'm glad more people have it.
I don't know why they didn't do that at the start, but there you go.
So with the new features in 14, besides that, is a new option allows you to capture burst photos by pressing the volume up button, and QuickTake video can be captured on supported devices by using volume down. So and that's pressing and holding. So if you click, it's a picture, either one. if you click and hold volume up, you've now got a fast way to do burst mode, which before was tap and slide, right? Tap and
slide.
Yeah, which isn't really fast for burst. And it was like kind of a, you gave that up for quick take. And then if you want to connect quick take to a button, then it's volume down.
Am I crazy, or is holding down the volume button annoying?
Yeah, it's annoying. You know what? I bet pre-iOS 14, quick take was both the volume buttons, and the change is probably actually that now burst mode is volume up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I was taking a burst, I wouldn't want to be holding, like, squeezing the phone. Like, it's more natural just to slide to the left and hold it.
Yeah. I wonder what the camera button does on the battery case. I'll have to try that.
Just takes a picture, and I guess you hold it down for quick take. That's probably what
happens. Oh, yeah. So that's always been the behavior. So now it's part of the phone. And then lastly, kind of in the photos area or video camera area, is mirror photos taken on your front camera. A new option in settings lets you capture mirrored selfies which reflect the front camera preview. So
that is like something that people have wanted since the first iPhone had a front facing camera. So that with the iPhone 4
and like Macs can do that, right?
Like so when you're using the viewfinder on the front camera, it is flipped. Right. So when you're previewing the photo you're about to take, it is mirrored. But then when you take the picture, it gets saved to your photo library as true to life. But most people are used to looking at themselves in like a mirror, which is reflected. So the true to life picture actually normally looks wrong. And so what they've done with iOS 14 is finally added a setting so that you can say, no, actually do save it in the mirrored mode, which is what most people actually want to happen. Like, I'm not even sure why it's off by default. Like,
so we should turn it on and see if
people want it that way around.
Okay.
Even if you decide later that you don't want it, you just flip the photo. Like, the solution is go edit and then just rotate, you know, flip the photo on its axis, which you can do in photos, but it makes no sense for the default to be the way around. And if you actually go on the App Store, there's like a whole subcategory of applications that all they do is they take front-facing pictures and save the picture the other way around, just because Apple never offered it. And it only took them 14 generations. But here they are.
I'm a big voice memos user, and I see a lot of people use voice memos too as like the modern, like reporters especially, like this voice memos is where you capture audio with versus like a cassette recorder or something, a digital recorder before that. So this is what they say about voice memos in iOS 14, and this applies to macOS Big Sur as well. They say that it's the most popular audio recording app in the world. So, okay, that's the first time I've heard them say that about voice memos.
If you're built in, I guess.
Right? But they
I
say,
wonder how many of Apple's built-in apps are just the most popular version of that app in the world. Like, it's got to be a lot of them.
I bet Tips is the most popular Tips app. Settings is the most popular Settings
app.
Well,
they say, like, Maps is the most popular. They say Messages is the most popular. They say News is the most popular. Like,
so which ones are not? You
know? Yeah, I like...
Is Calendar that probably, bad? Like,
yeah, exactly. It's hard to even think. Like, maybe Mail, maybe? But Apple Mail surely got to be the most popular today. Yeah. Like, maybe that will change when you're allowed to change your default email client.
Yeah.
But most of Apple's built-in apps just have priority because they're built-in.
Right. Maybe Spotify is more popular than music. if you look at it as Apple Music.
That's probably your best bet, yeah.
Yeah, because of the number of users. But music or voice memos, music memos is totally dead. Voice memos has an all new enhanced recording feature that lets you improve the sound quality of your recordings in a single tap. And I think what that's about is, like echo and background noise and that kind of thing. There's a mode now to have it be like, you know, we're recording us at this table in a restaurant, and there's a specific mode to say drown out all the other noise in the background to try to process it all out.
Kind of like, voice boost in Overcast, that kind of
thing. Sure. Yeah. Yep. The ability, two more things I'll share here, and then we'll move on from this. But I had a lot of fun with like just finding these things out.
These are good. Like, I didn't know most of these, to be honest.
Cool. And Apple Maps, there, you know how you have speed limit signs and stop signs. New to iOS 14, speed cameras. And so this is what they say about those. Maps lets you know when you're approaching speed cameras and red light cameras along your route. You can also see where individual cameras are located on the map. If someone were to say, like, do you think Apple would ever do this? I'd say no. Like, save it for Waze. As you know, like, Waze shows you, like, where a police report and that kind of thing. But the idea to say, like, there's a speed camera, which is kind of like, for Apple to note it, is like, there's just kind of a speed trap here. Like, make sure you're not speeding here.
it kind of half is Apple endorsing people breaking the law apart from when they're going to get caught?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, that's why it feels like something that Apple would never do.
But. Yeah. The other side of that is that, like, those signs that people have on the, that will be on the highway where it's like, your current speed is this. And so, you know, you're going to want to slow down so that you're not like a big number beside your car that shows that you're speeding. I think they're probably pretty effective. And that if you really want to monitor like that area for speeding and not just to fine people as a deterrent, but to make them slow down before they even do it for safety reasons, then that's effective. So I guess that's the angle here is that, you know, if the cameras are in a spot where like speeding is not just, you know, something that can get you a ticket, but it's leading to a lot of, you know, accidents. Then,
yeah, well, I mean, I would say ignoring all the morality arguments.
Right, yeah.
Speed camera tracking features are very popular.
And yeah.
So, Apple's added it, I guess.
When I was in Florida for the astronaut rocket launch with SpaceX a few months ago, or about a month and a half ago, the sheriff who was encouraging people to come despite, you know, pandemic, their office encouraged people to use Waze because – which you often hear, like, I think New York police will speak out against Waze and like they discourage it. They think it's a violation of the Constitution, like things like that. The police department in this county in Florida encouraged it, I think, because it would the reason that they gave was like the most accurate traffic data and like routing data, which is, I found kind of interesting, even though like Waze is like the app that you use if you're, you know, planning on traveling a long way and you don't want to get a ticket, you know, on the interstate or something. So, now on Apple Maps, you at least get that'll be interesting to see when those show up. Cause you know, that will be popular.
And I'm sure it'll be limited regions to start and stuff. And
sure.
Gradually roll out.
Yeah. So I've got a few more here, but I'll save some for future weeks and go from there. But, let's talk about Translate for a moment. So Translate was one of the big parts of the keynote. It's that all of a sudden Apple has kind of built into Safari and as its own app, what you would use Google Translate for. I think in the past couple of weeks, we've both had experience using Translate as part of Safari on the web. So what's your experience been like with Translate so far?
I was really impressed with it, actually. Like, often we have reports and, you know, Apple rumors and stuff that are written on Chinese websites, they're written on French websites, you know, great publications that understand the languages. And the only way I can read it is with machine translation. And so up to now, I've been relying on Google Chrome Translate, but I'm really looking forward to actually switching to just doing it directly within Safari, because all of my tests so far, the quality is very good. Like, maybe it's, you know, 95% good as Google Translate, but that's good enough. Like, it's hard on many sites to even realize that you actually are translating. It's super easy to, and it's built in. If you go onto a French language website or a Spanish language website or any of the 10 languages they support, the Safari automatically detects it's in a foreign language, and a little button just appears in the URL bar. You just click that, you say translate to English, and then, you know, almost a second, under a second later, it's done and the page is translated. Like, I can't knock it. It seems really good. And I don't know exactly how Apple even came about in this feature. Like, they must have acquired a company or something that just went under the radar.
I doubt that
they, like, you know, on their own invented a whole translation system for not just one language, but like 15. Like, that's a pretty big undertaking. So they must have acquired something along the way that we just never picked up on. But to me, I was really happy with it. And I love to use it. And as far as I can tell, I'm not going to be disadvantaged by using the Apple version. And it definitely feels like I'm going to get slightly more like privacy and it's going to be locked down and stuff. So I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, the equation is kind of, you know, if it was terrible, then you just wouldn't use it because it wouldn't be doing what you needed to do.
I just carry on using Google Chrome's Translate. Yeah.
So it's got to meet a certain threshold to be usable. You can give it a little bit of a pass because it's convenient, because it's built in to what you're already using. So it could be like a little bit worse than Google Translate, but not by a lot to, you know, have the convenience be worth it. But in my experience so far, like, I'm not seeing any Google Translate's not perfect. That's kind of helps here.
Yep.
There's not a super high bar because it's a hard problem to solve and Google hasn't nailed it yet. Like, you always need to give the disclaimer that this is based on a translation from Google Translate or now Apple Translate, because otherwise you're bound to be embarrassed and corrected by a native speaker. This week I had an experience where I was reading So in covering space news for Space Explored, there's both Russia's space program and then China's space program that are very active. And one thing that I was reading about was a local news story in China where China McDonald's had this ad campaign for kids to be interested in the China Space Agency. And it was like, it had like really cool graphics and everything. And I appreciated just the graphics alone, but there was a lot of context to it as well. And so I just used the built-in feature on Safari to translate it. And it was smooth. Like, it was just as easy as reading an article published in English, you know, where it's like, you weren't like trying to figure out what they're trying to say. You could tell that it wasn't written in English, you know, originally, but it was really convenient and reliable. So it's good on Apple so far.
Yeah. And I tried out the dedicated translation app as well. My dad speaks Spanish. So we were doing that a little bit, you know, just for a few minutes or whatever, just to try it out. It seems fine. Like that feels very much like the translate feature overall is just basically a clone of what Google Translate's done, right? Like, it's not breaking new ground. It's just offering a bit of an option. And, you know, that's fine. Like, I'm not going to stand here and say it's a revolution, because it's not. Like, other platforms and services offer the same feature. But it's just nice that you don't need third-party apps, and you can just, and especially for something that's sensitive, like talking, you do feel, you know, slightly more inclined to trust Apple to do that translation than to trust Google to do it or something like that. Do you
mm-hmm.
know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thunderbolt. This week we got word from Apple that Apple will continue to support Thunderbolt on Macs with Apple Silicon. Not a giant surprise there, because there seems to be a commitment. There seems to be a commitment to support all I/O. That's like, I think the reason it's like something to be answered as a question is because Apple Silicon runs on iPads and iPhones, but no iPad or iPhone has supported Thunderbolt. It's an Intel spec, but Apple's worked on it with Intel, and it's been in Macs. Like, Macs were first to get Thunderbolt 10 years ago, which is part of their statement. And they say that they're going to support, you know, Thunderbolt on Apple Silicon. I think the equivalent here would be like if they couldn't support SD cards natively without an adapter or something. Like, you know, I can't think of any Mac IO that won't be supported from current Macs to Mac with Apple Silicon, and Thunderbolt is in that category.
The silicon is like the chip architecture is so much more lower level than, you know, what ports does it have or what input and output does it support, right? Like, and Thunderbolt was an Intel produced standard, but they, you know, opened it up for anyone to be able to implement it. And I think AMD's working on a Thunderbolt implementation for their chips, and clearly Apple's going to be as well, right? Like, I'm pretty sure when Intel announced this, you know, this change of heart from being Intel exclusive to, you know, being available, there was probably some backdoor dealings between Apple and Intel going on then, so they could start, you know, engineering it for that time frame, right? Because,
right,
you know, otherwise the only other person they would have done it for is for AMD, and it's not like the Windows market is alive with people, you know, begging for Thunderbolt ports everywhere, right? Like, yeah. So clearly Apple and Intel had rehearsed this beforehand. It was strange they didn't, like, mention it in the WWDC, like, preview when they were talking about, like, you know, just all these cool things that the Apple Silicon is going to do. They didn't just, like, straight mention, oh yeah, we're going to support Thunderbolt. Like, it just been on one of those slides, you know, where they listed like 20 different things where,
yeah,
the Apple Silicon is going to be amazing.
I guess the confusion is that they say that they're going to, you know, the transition, the developer transition kit is packed with I/O, but it didn't have Thunderbolt.
Right. The transition kit is HDMI and USB 3 only.
Mm-hmm.
USB ports only. So, and obviously the real Mac Mini does have Thunderbolt ports on it, but clearly, the DTK does not represent final hardware.
Correct.
Like, if Apple's going to make Macs, they don't really have a choice but to have Thunderbolt ports on them, right?
Like, yeah, and I think a good thing to take away from this, too, is that when they say a family of Apple Silicon, they mean that there will be Apple chips that are designed for Macs that will never appear in the iPhone or the iPad.
Yep.
And
like, maybe the first version will just be like a modified version of the A14.
Like, you know? like there's been modified versions of iPhone chips for iPad to address graphic differences, power.
Right. If you look at that timeline, the iPad and iPhone chips started very similar. They were almost the same, right? They just let the iPad chip be slightly more, have a higher clock speed because it had more of a thermal window because it's an iPad, not a phone. But then as time went on, they very quickly diverged, and, you know, the more recent iPad chips are very different from the same versions that the phones have, if you know what I mean. Like, mm-hmm. they might be based on the same architecture, but the actual chips are, you know, relatively distinct. And I think that's what we'll see happen with the ARM Macs as well, is that the first Apple Silicon chips will probably be, you know, relatively similar to the iPad chips, you know, A14Z, whatever you want to call it. But then over time, they're going to diversify very quickly. And obviously, if they're going to address, you know, 16-inch MacBook Pro, iMac Pro, Mac Pro, and they said they're going to do a transition in 2 years, it's not going to be very long until they have, like, truly distinct chips in that family that are custom designed just for the thermal constraints of much bigger machines like laptops and desktops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And right. I think one thing to note, actually, mm-hmm. is just that, just because that means that the ARM Mac transition does not mean we're going to see the end of fans, right? Like, iPhones don't have fans, sure. iPads don't have fans, but the higher power Apple Silicon chips, they're going to be power hungry and they're going to get hot. And, you know, that, like, Apple's chips are great, but they still get hot. Like, even in an iPad Pro, if you do something intensive on it for a while, like, you know, a few minutes, it will warm up.
Yes. And if you do AR, it'll get hot.
Yeah, it will get hot, right? Yeah. And if you want to like best the performance of the 16-inch MacBook Pro and the, you know, desktop computers, they're going to have Apple Silicon Macs with fans. Like, maybe the MacBook Air doesn't need a fan, and maybe even the 13-inch MacBook Pro doesn't need a fan, and they can still best the performance there with, you know, higher efficiency. But if you're going up the line, there's no getting out of it. They're going to have fans, and hopefully the lower power operation, the fans won't be required. But if you're going to be pushing them to the max, and I think that's what Apple's going to want to do, they're not going to say, like, here's the same 16-inch MacBook Pro performance as your current one. It's just based on different architecture. They're going to say, this thing's 50% faster, right? And yeah. to do that, it's going to need fans. Like, you know, they're not miracle workers. They can't do everything. You're getting higher performance and you're getting longer battery life. Fans are just a fact of life.
Yeah, they're doing things with... The Mac chips will necessarily get... They'll be better than what's in current iPads because they're targeting higher end performance. And, you know, even with, like, doesn't the Apple TV have a fan?
Yes.
Yeah.
the A10, the 4K Apple TV has a fan.
Yeah. HomePod doesn't need to because it's not that intensive, but Apple TV has a fan. The 12 inch MacBook had no fan on Intel Core M and Core i3 chips, but it got hot. Definitely got hot. I would just like more fan control, like if saying, you know, I'm actually recording audio right now. Let me not have this fan blast off. And I don't care if it gets too hot, because there is an operating level where it's safe to have a lot of heat. It's just not pleasant, you know, so don't have it in your lap.
Yeah, like if you're doing laptop as desktop configurations, like mm-hmm. a lot of people do.
Indeed. Yeah. So, yeah, cool. Anything else this week?
That's all from me.
Awesome. Sounds great. That is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, just by searching for 9to5Mac. We also broadcast weekly on YouTube at youtube.com/9to5Mac. And if you have any feedback, you can email us at happyhour@9to5Mac.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Apollo Zach. And I also write space news for the network at spaceexplorer.com. Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZAMayo.
And you also blog at
BZAMayo.com.
Nice. And we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.